The Nightingale Conant Corporation is pleased to present Negotiating Strategies and Tactics, an Effective Manager Seminar with Brian Tracy.
Your success in business and your success in life may be determined by your ability to negotiate in your best interests. In fact, negotiating is a life process that affects everything that you do, everything that you say, almost all of your interactions with others, both personally, in business, socially, in a variety of other ways. And if you cannot negotiate well in your best interest, if you cannot negotiate on your behalf, then what you do is you become the victim of people who can negotiate well on their behalves. Now, I have a lot of experience in negotiating. Let me just take a second to tell you. I've been buying and selling and negotiating products and services and deals now for over 25 years. I have bought, sold, negotiated the selling, the leasing, the purchase, the development of something like $100 million worth of real estate. I have negotiated the importation, distribution, and setting up of the dealerships and sales of over $25 million worth of automobiles. I've negotiated printing contracts, I've negotiated consulting contracts, I've negotiated real estate development and land development contracts, I have negotiated the sale of a variety of different goods and services, including convention services, hotel services, training services, and so on. So I know an awful lot about negotiating, but I've also studied the subject for years. And in the next few minutes, what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to give you 21 of the most important ideas that I have learned in the field of negotiating that you can use starting right now to get better deals for yourself and better deals for your company and your organization. Basically, everybody wants the same things, and in different orders of priority. They want security, they want comfort, they want leisure, they want love, they want respect, and they want fulfillment. We begin to negotiate from the time we are infants. In fact, even little infants, I have a one-year-old son, even little children know that hugs and affection are the currency with which they negotiate with their parents and with other people. In fact, negotiating or not negotiating, compromising, trying to bring together conflicting interests is an essential part of human life. You and I are different. Every human being values different things in different ways. All values are subjective. When we say a subjective evaluation, it means that the only reason that we trade is because you have something that I want more and I have something that you want more, and as a result, we try to find a satisfactory way to, if you like, compromise and modify and adjust our different interests. So let's talk about negotiating. Let's talk about the 21 keys. A key point is that negotiating is a skill, that you can learn it as a skill. You can become better at it. The more you work at it, the more you understand the process, the more you think it through, the better you become, and the better a negotiator you are, the happier you will be, the more self-confident you will be, the more self-reliant, the more in control of your destiny you will be to the degree to which you can negotiate in your best interest. Principle number one with regard to buying and selling in the marketplace is that everything is negotiable. Everything is negotiable. Now, this is a key point, and you have to keep remembering that no matter what it looks like on the outside, everything is negotiable. One of the perfect examples of this is that people will print a price list, or they'll write out a price, or they'll put a price tag on a product or service, and they'll present it to you, and they say, here's the price. But the fact is that that price doesn't mean anything. Yet many people think because it's written down, it's immovable. Because it's written down, it's a fact. The fact is that all prices are arbitrary. Anybody who's in business knows that you set your prices very much in an arbitrary fashion, based on costs, based on anticipated profitability, based on competitive conditions, based on how much the market will bear, and so on. So all prices are arbitrary. That means all prices were made by somebody. That means that all prices can be revised, adjusted, and remade by somebody too. So always remember that even written prices are not valid. So if you develop the attitude that no matter what the price is, you can improve the deal in some way, this is your key. Always be looking for ways to improve the deal in your behalf, to get it cheaper, to get it faster, to pay less, to get more thrown in, and so on. And the key method is this. To be a successful negotiator, the key method is to ask. Ask for what you want. Ask honestly, ask ingenuously, adamantly, ask any way you like, but ask for a better deal. Ask for them to improve the offering. Ask and say why, and say why not. Now, there's a reason why people don't ask. Critical reason, and almost invariably, it's what goes back to our great bugaboo, the fear of rejection. The fear of rejection starts off in early childhood, and the fear of rejection is the fear of hearing the words no. As a matter of fact, we will often accept agreements and deals that are far less than we could get because we're afraid of asking for something better because we're afraid somebody will say no. And there's only one way to get over the fear of rejection with regard to negotiating. It's simply this, is to ask over and over again until you no longer fear or are worried about what anybody says. Psychologists call this the process of systematic desensitization. If you always ask for a better deal in your own behalf, if you always look at everything as being capable of being negotiated, eventually, no matter how many times people say no to you, it'll get to the point where it rolls off your back and you realize that a no is not personal, that a no doesn't mean anything. So always ask. It never hurts you to ask. And I have spoken to thousands of people in my negotiating seminars, and I've had experiences of my own where you ask for sometimes things that are ridiculous, and they say, okay, and they give it to you, and you say, that's amazing, and you wonder how much more you could have gotten. Negotiating is all a game. It's all a game. This is a perfect thing to remember in the back of your mind. It's all just a game. It's not real. It is not the most serious thing in life. Negotiating is a game. Some people look upon negotiating as the great game of life, and they insist upon negotiating even if there is improvement possible. They just like to haggle. They like to bargain. They like to negotiate because it's part of a game. It's fun to them. And if you look upon negotiating as fun, then you'll look for opportunities to engage in it whenever you can. And I'll show you as we go through the things you can do or not do to make it a game that you win more often than not. All right, here's point number two. This is the purpose of negotiating, or the aim of negotiating. And I want to read this because I think it's absolutely excellent. It says, the purpose of negotiating is to reach an agreement. Okay? The purpose is to reach an agreement. It's not just simply to negotiate, but it's somehow to get to an agreement. To reach an agreement wherein all parties are satisfied. And they are satisfied to the extent that their needs are met. They feel that they have come out well in a negotiation. A good deal is a deal that both people feel that they're better off as a result of having entered into. And if their needs are met, they are impelled, and this is it, they are internally motivated to fulfill their commitments. A good deal is one where the person is happy enough about having entered into the deal that they want to go through with it and they want to fulfill their commitments. A bad deal is one that once a person is in the deal, they feel uneasy about the deal and they do everything possible not to fulfill their commitments. And finally, a good deal is one where parties want to fulfill their commitments and enter into additional deals, enter into additional negotiations and transactions. So if you look upon negotiations from this point of view, you realize that negotiation is something that has a beginning, a middle, and it has no end because it goes on continuously. When you enter into negotiations, look upon it as part of establishing relationships. Some of the best business relationships that you or I will ever have begin with a negotiation that works out satisfactorily, where both parties are happy, they're satisfied, they're fulfilled, and it goes on for years. So be alert to that. The worst type of negotiation is one where when it ends, neither party wants to negotiate again, and neither party feels comfortable, or one party does not feel comfortable about fulfilling their commitments. Styles of negotiating. There are several, and there are several results of these styles. The first style, A, is what is called win-lose. Win-lose negotiating is where A gets what he wants, A wins, B loses. Win-lose negotiating, of course, is not the kind of negotiating that leads to additional transactions. B is what you might call the reverse, it's lose-win. Lose-win means that B gets what he wants, B wins, A loses. B's needs are satisfied, A's needs are not satisfied. Or then we have C, which is lose-lose. Lose-lose means the two of them enter into a deal neither of them is satisfied with, neither of their needs are met, both lose. Both are not happy with the deal. This often happens with antagonism, animosity, arguing, quarreling, and so on. Now, D is what we call compromise. Now, compromise is where some needs are met, but not all of either party. Partially satisfying, partially dissatisfying. It's the best, if you like, of the worst types of deals. The next type is no deal. You present your positions and your needs and your interests, and you find that you cannot come to an agreement. that you're too far apart. And finally, F is what is called win-win. Both parties feel that they win. Both parties feel that they have entered into an excellent deal. Both parties are happy and satisfied and eager to continue, fulfill their commitments, and enter into additional deals. Now, win-win requires, in most cases, coming to what is called the third alternative. Since both people enter into a negotiation with a series of ideas, interests, positions fixed in their minds, win-win means that you negotiate and you look for a third alternative, which in most cases is different from what either party came to the negotiation with, but is more satisfactory to both parties than the original positions. And this entire course, from everything we talk about for the next few minutes, is going to be based on win-win negotiating. The things that you can do to enter into agreements, to give yourself the strongest position, but to enter into an agreement where both parties feel happy, satisfied, and fulfilled as a result. This brings us to number four. This is called the critical element in negotiating, and it's called power. Power is a critical element in negotiating. The more power you have in a negotiation, the more likely it is that you will end up with a satisfactory result. If a person has a gun and puts it at your head and demands your money, this may not be a very satisfactory negotiation. It may be a win-lose negotiation, but the power is so great that A gets what he or she wants and B gets nothing. Okay, so let's look at some of the elements of power. Power, by the way, is all in perception. It is the perception, not the power itself. One of the most famous stories in military history was the fall of Singapore to the Japanese in World War II. The British Army had over 50,000 troops on Singapore, and they surrendered to a Japanese general who had less than 20,000 men under his command because the British were convinced that the Japanese had over 100,000 men ready to assault the island. And the Japanese were capable of exploiting that perception and were able to bring about a total capitulation, the biggest single defeat and surrender in the history of the British Empire. And there's several ways that you can create the perception. Let's look at them. One of the ways, of course, is by scarcity. If you can create the perception that you have something that the other person needs and you don't have very much of it and other people want it, that gives you tremendous bargaining power. Another is indifference, the perception of whether or not you care whether this person buys it or doesn't buy it or enters into the agreement, especially if the other person wants it. Indifference gives you tremendous power. Indifference, of course, is created by you having lots of options. The more options you have, the greater your indifference. Authority is important, too. The fact that you have the authority to make a decision or not make a decision that will benefit someone else gives you power. And one other point of power is what is called courage, the willingness for you to walk away from a deal, the willingness for you to take a strong position on a deal, the willingness for you to take calculated risks gives you perceived power in the eyes of the other person. A second element of power is the power of commitment. If the other party perceives that you are totally committed to getting the very best deal, that you will do whatever is necessary, in the Singapore example, the British were convinced that the Japanese would overrun the island and kill everybody on it. The Japanese were able to convince the British of this because they had overrun all of Malaysia up to that point. So they could see that this commitment or determination was very, very strong, and it caused them to capitulate in the negotiations because they did not want what would happen as a result. Now, another part of power is the power of expertise. In a negotiation, the person who has the greatest knowledge, the greatest perceived expertise, who can say, this is how and why it should happen because of my knowledge, is a person who has tremendous power. If you're selling a very complex or sophisticated or difficult product or service, a person who has knowledge power has tremendous power in the negotiation. A person who can say that this complexity of factors will bring you what you're looking for, what you want and need, at a price that is satisfactory, that carries a lot of weight to a buyer who does not have the information. Also, you have the power of knowledge of needs, especially knowledge of needs of the other person. For instance, there are many examples, many cases, where in dealing in business, someone will find out that this company has a very pressing need for a product or service, or that this company has serious financial problems and difficulties and needs extensions of credit, or that this company has financial difficulties and needs to make this sale at whatever price. So knowing what the needs of the other person are gives you a tremendous amount of power. There's another type of power that's important, the power of empathy. It's the power of identification, of establishing a warm relationship with the other person so that the other person feels that you really care about them getting a good deal. Now, this should be genuine. It should be a very honest empathy, and you should sincerely want to make sure that both parties benefit and win from this deal. And if you feel that and you express that, it gives you a lot of power, because people are far more likely to enter into agreements with people they like than people that they don't. The other two types of power are, first of all, the power of rewarding and punishing. If you have the ability to confer rewards, benefits, agreements, royalty agreements, or something on someone, they're far more likely to do business with you. And if you have the ability to punish them financially by withdrawing some reward or some type of remuneration, that will cause them to want to negotiate with you. And finally, the last is the power of investment. The power of investment refers to the amount of time and effort that you and or the other party have spent in this negotiation. If you have only spent 5 minutes, there's very little investment. But if you spent 5 days, 5 weeks, 5 months over time trying to work toward an agreement, the more investment that each party has, or the more investment that the other party has, the greater power you have in terms of making it come true. If the other party has, for instance, done extensive market research and spent an enormous amount of money in preparation for this negotiation, they have a lot of investment and you have a lot of power. No one will negotiate with you seriously unless they are convinced that you have the power to help them or to get something that they want, or the power to hurt them and deprive them of something they want in some way. So all serious negotiations begin with a person believing you have some sort of power, authority, and ability to help them get something that they want. So think about that when you go into negotiation. How can you increase your perceived power? One of the things that people do to increase their perceived power is they'll bring an expensive lawyer or an expert to a negotiation in order to answer questions, which causes the other party to say, this person is extremely well prepared and knowledgeable. Okay, here is number five. Number five is emotion. Emotion is a key factor in negotiating. And one of the most important things I can tell you is that the more you can keep your emotions out of the negotiation, the more capable you will be of negotiating and arranging the best deal for yourself and your organization. The more emotional you become, the less capable you are of performing and acting in your own best behalf. Now, what are the most dangerous emotions? Well, the most dangerous emotions are greed. Greed is an emotion that very often backfires, and that you can get into an agreement on the basis of greed that will turn out to be to your detriment. Or fear. Fear is another emotion. You have to be aware of what you're feeling and thinking in a situation like this. And the third is anger. The triggering greed, fear, and anger is often used by manipulative negotiators to get people overwrought. Because when you become emotional, your ability to make proper evaluations is distorted considerably. But the best and most important of all emotions is desire. And I'll talk about desire here, because desire is a key factor in determining the course of negotiating. First of all, with regard to desires, ask yourself this: how badly do you want it? You see, how badly you want it and how badly you express that you want it determines how much power, how much ability you have to negotiate successfully. If you really want something so badly that you can taste it, you're going to pay almost anything. If the other person knows that, they are going to be able to get that out of you. So you have to ask yourself, B, what's the worst possible outcome? In order to get yourself to the point where you're unemotional, what's the worst possible outcome? What would happen if you didn't get it at all? And prepare your mind for not getting it. Prepare your mind for the worst possible outcome. What if you didn't get it? Would it kill you? Would it end your life? Not at all. And do whatever you possibly can to lower the amount of desire that you have. Be willing to let it pass if you like. The third question is to ask yourself, so what? If the deal collapses, if it doesn't work out, so what? I used to work with a very successful businessman, and when I get very excited about a deal, he'd say, Brian, deals are like buses. There'll always be another one along. Don't get excited. Don't worry about this. If it doesn't go together, forget it. Something else will happen. So what you have to do is you have to practice detachment. When you go into a negotiation, watch yourself very carefully. Practice detachment, like the Buddhists do. Don't get involved. Don't get emotionally involved. Don't identify with a negotiation. That's the key to your retaining a position of strength. And this brings us to the next key element in negotiating, which is time. Time and timing. Now, let me just say 2 points with regard to time and timing. Is that the key elements in timing are urgency. If there is urgency versus lack of urgency, the person who is most urgent to enter into the agreement has the weaker hand. The person who is less urgent, if you like, or not urgent, has the stronger hand. If you can create urgency by suggesting that the product or service is scarce, that you're running out of it, that the price is going up, and so on, it gives you a position of strength. And the second thing with regard to timing is delay. Remember that, as the Japanese say, delay is the cruelest form of denial. The more you delay a negotiation, the more you delay a resolution for a person who wants to come to some kind of conclusion, the greater strength that you have. And I remember a very common story of a gentleman who went to Japan to negotiate a contract for his company. Very important contract for him. He was a young, upcoming executive. And the Japanese picked him up at the airport, picked him up in a limousine, and drove him to his hotel and said, "We'll take care of everything while you're here in Japan. You are our honored guest. Give us your plane tickets. We'll arrange for your transportation back to the airport," and so on. They took away his plane tickets. They knew exactly how much time he had to make a deal. He had 6 days in Japan, and then he had to leave and get back to the States. What they did is, for the first 5 days, they took him out, they entertained him, they took him to the plant, they wined him, they dined him, but they never discussed business. He was trying to be as polite as possible, and they didn't get down to serious negotiating till the final day. And the final negotiating took place in the car on the way to the airport, and he was danced around and accepted a far worse deal than he ever would have if he realized that they were using timing against him. So here's the final rule with regard to timing. It's the 80-20 rule. The 80-20 rule says that the last 20% of any negotiation will deal with 80% of the important issues and the value of that negotiation. The first 80% only deals with 20%. The last 20% deals with the key issues. So be very alert to that. It's very seldom that you make some kind of great breakthroughs in the first couple of minutes. This brings us to number 7. Key to negotiating is options. And basically, options equal freedom. You are only as free as the options that you develop. In other words, if you go into a negotiation and you have only one choice and it's what the other person has or does not have, your hands are tied. But if you have a variety of options, if you know that you can go a variety of different ways and do a variety of different things, then you have a tremendous amount of strength, power, and bargaining leverage. The key to options is this: the more the better. The more the better. So do your research, get your information, find out where you can get the product or service, how much you'll have to pay for, who else will supply it, what the times and dates and deliveries are. So when you go into a negotiation, you know that you don't have your back against the wall. Again, develop alternatives, develop options. You're only as free as your alternative courses of action. All right, number 8 is know what you want. Know what you want is so important. It's amazing how many people enter into negotiations and they don't know what they want until they get there, or they make it up as they go along. Knowing what you want requires thinking it through in advance. Think it through in advance. Think it through to the point of clarity. And by the way, this means think it through on paper. Write it down. Write down everything that you want. Describe the ideal agreement. What would be your ideal outcome? Think it through. Talk it over with someone else. Discuss it with someone. But find out what would be your ideal outcome. And say, now, if we could have everything that we wanted, if this deal was working absolutely perfectly, what would it be? Now, this doesn't mean that you want to get the product or service for free, or that you want something that's totally to the disadvantage of the other person, but there is an ideal outcome with which you would be satisfied. And this brings us to a very simple equation, which is what we call high, medium, and low. When you go into a bargaining transaction, when you go in to buy or sell something, you should have what we call the best. This is the very best that you could expect. The second, or the medium, is the acceptable. And the third is the worst. If you got driven back to the worst, this is the lowest that you could possibly go. This is what is called your ultimate fallback position. You could fall back to this. You would hate to do it, but that's the lowest that you would go. But below that, you couldn't do anything. So where do you start in a bargaining or a negotiation? Well, you start here. You start and you begin slightly above your very best. Because very often, you will find that you'll begin high, you'll have to make a concession, and you'll end up getting your best deal. But think through, what is the best that you could reasonably ask for? What is an acceptable deal? What is the worst that could happen to you? And have it worked out and think it through on paper before you do it. Remember, the person who is perfectly clear about what they want has a tremendous advantage over the person who is vague or fuzzy. Clarity, clarity, clarity. Key to negotiation. Number 9, this is 80% of all negotiating success is preparation. 80% of your success will be contained in the preparation that you do before you go into the person's office. The key elements that you look at in terms of preparation: subject matter. What are you going to talk about? What is the purpose of the meeting? What is the purpose of the negotiation? Define it clearly. What are you going to include in the negotiation? What are you going to exclude from the negotiation? And objectives. What are your objectives? What do you want to accomplish? What do you want to accomplish when you go into this discussion? Are you clear about your goals? You see, the clearer you are about your goals, the easier it is for you to convey it to them, the easier it is for you to bargain on your own behalf, the easier it is for you to move forward and backward. What are the issues? What are the issues of contention? In other words, what are the areas of conflict or disagreement? What are the things that have to be discussed and resolved? Where you have one opinion, they may have another. And finally, D is, what are your positions? What is the starting position? Are you starting off with a desire to enter into a negotiation, and they are starting off with no desire at all? Or are you both starting off with a desire to come to some kind of happy compromise? But find out what your positions are and think these through on paper. Think through in your own mind what's going to happen. Okay, this brings us to positions, and this is number 10. Now, positions are important. Positions are starting points. Positions include where you're coming from, where you're going, how much and how little you can accept. Positions refer to, if you like, boundary conditions, the things that must be dealt with, the constraints to the agreement. Let us say that you have this. Here is a position. And here at the top of the position, you have the best possible. Here you have the worst possible, and what you're looking for is something in between. And here you have the minimum and your maximum that you can go in either direction in order to achieve the best and the worst. So think through your position clearly so you know where you're starting. Ask for A, what are your essentials? What must you have as a result of this? What must you have? What must you not have? What are your minimums and maximums? Think that through. And B, what are the others' essentials? What is their minimum? What is their maximum? What must they absolutely have? I negotiated a lease not long ago for some office premises. As I sat down doing my pre-negotiation analysis, and I knew that the owner could only lease the premises under certain terms and conditions and for no less than a certain amount, or the mortgage holder would not approve it. So I knew that the essentials of the other were a specific parameter. Now, times, terms, amount of free rent, parking, and so on, those were things that could be negotiated by the landlord, but the basic rent was controlled by the mortgage holder, and I wanted to stay in that property. So knowing the other's essentials made it possible for me to negotiate a much better lease than if I hadn't thought it through in advance. Also, what are you willing to concede? What are you willing to concede in order to get your essentials? Think of everything that you want and say, what must I have? What do I want to have? What would it be nice to have? And think of what you would concede. And D, with regard to positions, what sort of tie-in concessions do you have?